were also, well, you were the first president of the University of Prince Edward Island. And so I read a little article about that history. And one of the key challenges faced in the founding of the University of PEI was merging different much-loved community traditions into one workable new institution that was also acceptable to the wider community. In Burnaby, it seemed that Simon Fraser University was relatively free of this challenge, that the mountain was a blank slate, at least from the perspective of the province. In what ways was this an advantage for the university at the outset?
Prince Edward Island had two universities. Had a Roman Catholic university and what was perceived as a Protestant university. It wasn't, it was secular, but only Protestants went there and so on. When I went there in 1969, the government had had a royal commission in 1965 on which President Mackenzie sat, which concluded that they couldn't get the two universities to cooperate in any sensible way. They didn't put it quite that brutally, but that's what it said. The Premier, 33-year-old Alex Campbell, decided to bet everything, and he simply said, we're setting up a new secular university, the University of Prince Edward Island, and we will give no money to the existing universities, which in effect shut them down. So when I went in, I had these two universities, and the public was divided. When I went to PEI in 69, you had a Catholic doctor, dentist, car dealer, went to a Catholic hospital and so on, or a Protestant one. Mm-hmm. I asked the business manager if he had a good doctor, and he said yes. And I said, oh, see if he'll take me, and he did. And I didn't really think much about it. About 6 months later, someone said to me, God, that was brilliant of you choosing that doctor. I said, why? Only Jewish doctor on the island. Everyone waiting to see whether I was Catholic or Protestant. So I knew that that was going to be a huge fight, I thought. But also, both places had, in the last 2 years, appointed a lot of new faculty because they wanted to get a majority in the new university. The legislation guaranteed the rights of students and faculty for 2 years. I knew that it would be almost impossible to get out of that. But I also knew that a number of these new young faculty had come out of the student and faculty revolutions of the 60s. So from my point of view, I had to merge the Catholics, the Protestants, and the revolutionaries. On top of that, we had a brand new University Act that gave far more power to students and faculty than traditional university acts. So we had a brand new act. We had three totally different groups. On October the 2nd this year, I gave a talk at Prince Edward Island in which I said that, in fact, when I arrived, I found that a great deal had already been done and that the university community was almost entirely determined to make UPI a success. I said later that I knew six people who wanted it to fail. In fact, I only knew three, but I allowed 100% error. And in fact, the government and the politicians and so on were all wrong. The community and the existing institutions all wanted the new one to succeed, there's no doubt about it. It was also helped by money and so on. But
it was quite a different situation then from the one
totally.
In Burnaby. Because it didn't seem as if
totally.
the founding of SFU clashed at all with the values of the local community.
No.
Although in the end, or later on, we do find that, in fact, community values, I'm not sure if respect is the right word, but did in some ways SFU did not respect the community values around their value of the their love of that green space on the mountain, that they didn't want to see development below the ring road.
No.
And because there, in the end, there were kind of two issues. One, who controlled development on campus, especially market housing proposals. But below the ring road, was that land going to be developed?
No.
And so in...
We had nothing to... I had nothing to do with that.
Yeah. And maybe it really wasn't apparent at that time when SFU was... That was something that developed later.
If it was, it would have been to the president. Shram, McTaggart Cowan, I think, was a much more perceptive man than most people think here. Most people at Simon Fraser thought that he was a civil servant who had been great when he arrived with the public. He was a Rhodes Scholar. He had come from Scotland, I think, when he was a boy, definitely when he was a boy. He was still a passionate Scot. That's why they have one of the great bagpipe bands in the world, and why they call their teams the Clansmen, which is giving them a bit of a problem in the American South now. I watched him perform, and he was marvelous with community groups, women's volunteer groups, really any social group. He always sounded a bit like a Boy Scout leader to me, and when we actually got faculty, I was his kind of chief advisor in many ways, and I did say to him once that the Boy Scout leader was great with community groups, but it wasn't great with faculty. But
so did he go out in to say the community of Burnaby and
everywhere?
Oh, okay.
He in the first year, 1964, I think it was, he gave 446 luncheon or evening talks all over the province, and certainly in Burnaby and Surrey, everywhere. Anyone who asked, he would go. And I went to a number of them and so on. And I would sometimes, depending on the group, I'd prepare something for him sometimes. But I'm quoted actually in Hugh's book that I don't think he was as much as a Boy Scout as he pretended.
Yeah.
I always thought he was much more sophisticated and that it was a bit of an act. But unfortunately, when all the troubles started at Simon Fraser, he wasn't good at it.
Mm.
And he made one or two quite serious mistakes for the time. I was on leave and in London when he got the records of the graduate students who had been demonstrating at the high school in Burnaby and tried to expel them, which was a disastrous mistake.
Oh, yes.
And
Hugh Johnson does a wonderful overview of all those troubles and where they came from. And did you feel that he had covered it?
I was very, very happy with it. The criticism, which I don't share at all, is that it's very much a historian's history. It's based on documents.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And he didn't interview many of the people who were very much involved. Didn't interview me, for example.
Oh, that's interesting. No,
he had a graduate student interview me. And but he didn't interview lots of people. So, for example, there's a very good review of it in the CAUT bulletin. Of course, CAUT was hostile to Simon Fraser from the very beginning for a lot of wrong reasons. But it was written by, the review was written by a friend of mine, and he says that he was involved in two of the absolutely key committees that led to the censure of Simon Fraser, and he wasn't interviewed.
Oh, okay.
And there are a lot of people who object to that. I think tactically it was a mistake.
Hmm.
You know, I didn't care because I was very busy at Simon Fraser. B, as he said, I dictated a 40-type page account of my beginnings at Simon Fraser that I sent to him, and I thought that that probably covered anything that he was going to do.
And your wife did as well.
Well, my wife wrote an article.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes,
but,
okay.
But I also, and I wrote an article, but I'd also dictated 40 pages of type that I sent him from Simon Fraser, soon after I got to Simon Fraser, actually the third year. So it was all very fresh in my mind then. And that's now in the archives. The articles came much later. The articles were written in the 80s. And I wasn't upset about it at all. But a number of people were. And there is a criticism that it's too much based on documents. That happens to suit me. I like this. I distrust memory, including my own, as time goes on. And I think interviews and memory have to be taken with a good deal of checking. And but there's no doubt that they please people's egos. And I think Hugh did make a bit of a mistake on it. In fact, there's some talk now about whether Hugh might do one of UPI. And he and I have talked about it. In fact, I was to see him before I went into hospital. And as soon as I'm better, I'm going to see him again. And I'm going to tell him that one of the reasons they want it done now is while there are still some people alive to be interviewed.
Yes.
And that maybe if he does decide to do it, maybe he should think about more interviews.
You know, I'm very close to the end of the interview, and I just wanted to ask, do you think that Simon Fraser University has truly found a home on Burnaby Mountain, that the mountain is really a part of its identity now?
Oh, yes, and I think it will be more and more. I think, for example, the beginning of the city up there has made a huge change already, I'm told. And I think as that develops, it will. I think, too, that they will get more residences, which I think is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is generally across the country more sympathy coming back to residences than there has been. When we started residences, Simon Fraser, we weren't going to have residences at all. And what is the time, by the way?
It's 20 to 12.
Fine, thank you.
Yes, and we're just about, unfortunately, I'm just right at the end of this particular disc. So I'd like to thank you very much.
Okay.
And this has been a wonderful
thank
talking
you.
To you.